So our guest today is Bela Fleck. Bela Fleck has appeared on Unreal Bluegrass three times previously, twice, to talk about his classical releases, which were just amazing. And the last time was with his wife, Abigail Washburn. So he's been here in many capacities and share a lot of his music here on Unreal Bluegrass. Today he's here to talk about My Bluegrass Heart, new CD, two CD collection, 19 tunes. I'm very fortunate in that I've had the album for 3 or 4 weeks. That's not just the only fortunate part of my life for this interview. I saw them like two nights ago. I saw this band, the traveling part of My Bluegrass Heart, and it just really helped inform me more about just listening to the album. I had a greater sense of what was going on. I hope that you will at the end of this discussion. We're going to get right into talking to Bela Fleck right here on Unreal Bluegrass. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard one of my favorite cuts from My Bluegrass Heart, Strider. And I'm so happy to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass a favorite of the show and of mine, Bela Fleck. How are you, Bela?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. My Bluegrass Heart landed on my desk a couple of weeks ago, and I've listened and listened and listened. I saw the performance that you're traveling with Wednesday night as we're discussing this, which was just a phenomenal show. I want to remind the listeners there are 19 cuts on the two CD set, which is My Bluegrass Heart. It covers a lot of different material and a lot of different experiences with you. And I want to, if I could just draw you for a second, I'm going to come back and talk about Strider separate from this, but I want to talk to you a little bit about, you wrote a really nice, an extended liner note that folds out from like a poster inside the set, which explains, you know, where this album lies, and I guess in the progression of what you're doing, or the continuation of what you're doing, the inspirations for it. And there's one line in that I'll pull you to as we get to it. But can you Tony Rice? Let's start off with Tony Rice. Let's start about your bluegrass albums and why you think this is the third of that. I guess it'd be
sure.
A trilogy.
Yeah, well, thanks, by the way. Thanks for having me on and also supporting all the music for all of us out here.
Thank you.
Trying to do our thing.
You're welcome.
We really appreciate it. Tony is, you know, was my hero. Coming up, he was older than me. He was doing incredible music with all the people I wanted to play with. And at a certain point, I started to get to play with him a little bit, and it was profound. And the thing about Tony is he could make you play better than you knew you could. And so that's addictive. It's kind of like having a performance drug. Like, would you take a performance drug if it made you play better? Well, I don't know. It'd be pretty hard not to, you know. So the performance drug was Tony Rice. And if you could get him to play on your album, you knew not only you, but everybody would play better, and it would have the potential of an amazing feel, which is, you know, what we prize in bluegrass music even more than our solos or anything. If we can get this certain kind of pocket, we're just like pigs and you know what. And so when he played on the Drive album for me, you know, and it was a combination not just of Tony, of course, but also combining that magic that he had with Sam Bush's sort of super lock on rhythm. Mm-hmm. It was so super grounded, and yet it danced like crazy. So that was very hard to not want. And so after I made the Drive album, I went off and did my, you know, Flecktones career, and 10 years later I was like, it was time to do something of my own away from the band. And I thought, well, I want all the people who've been loving the Flecktones who don't know bluegrass to hear that band again, and I would love to get, you know, I was dying to play with those guys again. So we made Bluegrass Sessions and took it on tour, which was the point where Tony kind of left me in the lurch and decided at the very last minute, as he was prone to do occasionally, that he couldn't really do 6 weeks on a tour bus with the guys. He just backed out. And Brian Sutton came in and saved the day and became, you know, a great go-to guy with his own gifts. But still the Tony thing, because of where he sits in my, you know, coming up and everything, how he was a hero before I even was playing that well, anything, he was always the guy I wanted. So I kept waiting and waiting for another chance to record with him, and it just didn't seem to be coming. And 20 years went by, and I had a pile of tunes, you know, that I was, you know, afraid I was going to forget, and I was really missing that part of me, because, you know, if you come up in bluegrass, you're a bluegrass person, you've got a bluegrass heart, and
there you go,
you just are, even if you come from New York City like I do.
Yeah.
And so at a certain point, I just had to go ahead and do it without Tony, because it was clear he wasn't coming back. And yet he's like, you know, it's like as if he was in the room for this record, because every guitar player is so influenced by him.
You have to be. And you have to be. If you've ever heard him, and I was mentioning this the other day to someone, that I think everybody remembers where they were the first time they heard Tony's playing, because it was. I can't tell you why. You could, but I just know that I had to sit up and think, this is something I've never heard before.
Right, and some musicians have that thing, and it's a very rare gift. And Earl Scruggs had it, and when people heard Earl Scruggs play, they, you know, the people that were unactivated banjo players suddenly were activated. It's like their code was turned on in their computer brains, and all of a sudden they had to go get a banjo and they had to go learn how to play it, and and they were Earl Scruggs lovers. And Tony Rice had that same impact. And I would maintain that the people who tend to have that kind of impact have a very strong rhythmic concept, as well as, you know, having good notes, good note choices. So at any rate, I couldn't get Tony, and I decided to start looking around at what else was out there, because I wasn't going to just not do it anymore just because he couldn't play. I wasn't playing. And then that's when I started really exploring, you know, who's out there. Because I think I had a little bit of an elitist point of view. Not a little, very elitist point of view. It was like, when I play bluegrass, I play it with Sam Bush, Tony Rice, Stuart Duncan, and Jerry Douglas. And if they're not there, I'm not playing bluegrass. That was my point of view. Because I didn't play it very often. I didn't get that many chances. So when I did, it was always with them.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, I was in the position of, like, really taking a good look at what had happened to the music in the last, you know, 30 years, really, since Drive. And realizing the great richness that we have on the instrumental side, because of course that's my focus, being an instrumentalist and writing a lot of tunes. And I love bluegrass vocals, and there's some, you know, lots of great options in that. But that wasn't what this was going to be. This was like dealing with all this music I had written that was sitting unused, that I had to do something with, or it was just going to be gone. So and that's when I really got to enjoy, you know, make all these new relationships and deepen relationships with people like Michael Cleveland and Sierra Hall, who I had produced, but we never really played together. And you know, Dominic Leslie and Paul Cohort and, gosh, Molly Tuttle, and going in deeper with Thiele and Billy Strings, who I'd never played with before. You know what I mean? It just, old friends, you know, my old pals were all there too, Sam and Jerry and Stuart and, you know, David Grisman, but it quickly turned into a community album.
There are so many, and you mentioned this, and I want to get to a quote that I think sums up for me, not for you, but there are so many great young players that are playing so just unbelievable, and they seem to be within, you know, half a dozen years of each other in age, and they all seem to be creating this force that as you're looking through, you know, what am I going to do with this music? And I think you kind of realize I've got all these people right here, and that would be the way to do it and pay homage to what was the original part of Tony's music and also keep that flavor there. But you have a quote in your notes that say, I realized there were so many great players now that I could explore the new bluegrass continuum on this album. That continuum, I think, is the key word in that sentence, is that you've always been part of that, Bailey. You've always been part of that continuum from the beginning to through Newgrass, and then you did other things, and you've come back. And but I like that quote, because on the album you have all these people that you've known forever that you can get, and then you have all these newer, younger people, and it's like there's a weird blanket, very short blanket over all of them as far as their age, and their skill set is just remarkable. And I'm so glad you pulled so many of them in for this.
Well, I'm also thrilled that they all took it seriously, and they brought their A game, and they wanted to work hard and really make it happen, because they were, in their minds, that especially for the younger ones, you know, they were playing on Drive, or they were playing on Bluegrass Sessions, which to them, again, because, you know, Tony Rice is to me, I am to some of them, because
absolutely,
of just simply the age group. And that's the way age works in music and in a lot of areas. You look up to the people that came before you that did, you know, notable work. Not saying mine's notable. Someone else can say that if they want to, but you know what I mean. It's just natural. So they brought a lot of desire to, like, really, really get this stuff. So we could, you know, nobody was like, I don't want to rehearse, or actually Tony, if Tony was there, he would have been the one saying, too many brains, simplify. or, I can't rehearse, but we'll get it on the session, you know, and I'd be fighting to get it out of him, but he would bring it, you know, once he was there.
He was a day of kind of guy.
Yeah, he wanted to be there then, and he preferred if it wasn't that crazy, but then he would love it. He would write, you know, call me and say, man, listen to Drive again. a new bluegrass session is my finest hour. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. And so you knew that even though while we were there at the session, he was whinging about how complicated I had made things. He was very, very proud of these projects. That made me feel good. You know, it was all good.
Yeah. Tony was in last year as we're all huddling around our COVID places, wherever that may be, you know, the news comes about Tony. And then for you, I'm acutely aware of Chick Corea because of music that I like and play. And then I know that Chick Corea passed away also. And I thought, and then Bill Emerson was after this. And he was another banjo god for me, probably for you also in the time. So there's just been a lot of things going on during this period. And you've taken the opportunity to put this great collection together. Like I say earlier, there's 19 tunes on it, 21 musicians on the recorded session. And then I saw you the other day, which I want to talk about, and there were five people plus you, and you recreated, they weren't all the people that were on the album, obviously, but they were able to recreate those parts, and there were people who played in so well, and it's just remarkable that you can collect that group together and take this sound on the road and grab it, although it's different. But grab it and put it together and put it on stage for an absolutely just a wonderful show. I think you always have a good time, but I felt like you had a really good time when I saw you on stage because of the comfort and because of looking at and being able to really be the conductor in a way that look at this person or look at that person and things take off from there. You had a great cast. Go ahead.
Well, I just feel like it's bluegrass. The bluegrass that Bill Monroe and Flatten Scruggs and other people created is a team sport. So it's not about a look at me thing, even though, of course, you want to do your best when it's your time. But what I love about bluegrass is that you put together a team, and it's kind of like jazz in that way.
You curate
a team, and you say, I'm not presenting just me showing off my whatever thing. You're like, I'm going to put together a group of people that can make my vision come alive. Mm-hmm. For how the music could sound. It's because there's a lot of different kinds of bluegrass, and so the Bela Fleck curated version of bluegrass certainly shows a lot of wonderful musicianship and playing ability. But it also is about a band sound that has a lot of allegiance to the Tony Rice concept and the way bands sounded that he had. But builds on that, and my own arrangement ideas and stuff. I'm just as proud of coming up with a neat way to voice the music in a different way, arrangement-wise, making people drop out and come in different ways, or the beat or the feel of a particular section, as I am about any solo or any pyrotechnic kind of thing. That's what I get excited about.
I think that comes through. And let me just – and I want to talk about Strider again. I told you I would come back to this song and tune, and I haven't let it go. But on the stage the other night, I saw you with – I see Justin Moses, Sierra Hall – there was Mark Schatz behind you on bass, and who's one of your old time friends, I know, and also Michael Cleland, and then you mentioned Brian Sutton coming in to play some things for you in the past. That's what you traveled with. That's a powerful group, and I know that as that tour with that particular group ends, you're going to start off with another group of equally adept musicians.
Yeah, well, this is a dream team, and I had a feeling this was going to be pretty spectacular, knowing all the players. What I didn't know is how hard they were going to work to really assimilate this music, especially the songs they didn't play on.
Exactly.
This isn't the band. Yeah, this band never actually played together on the record. They were all on different tracks together. So they had to learn quite a lot of very complex music. And honestly, I have to say, I know this might sound odd, but it was a gift to them because I don't have the same opportunity that they had to learn so many things from all these other great players on their instruments. But like Sierra learned everything Sam played, everything Chris played, and now she's, it's going to do great things to her playing she's already ridiculous, but it's like brand new. It's like pouring fertilizer into an already burgeoning garden.
That's exactly
Michael Cleveland, it's like he can do anything, but he gets pigeonholed as a, as a straight up player, and boy, you can't do that any better than him.
No.
But he's like eager to like show some new cards, and he can do it on my music. And I didn't know exactly how that was going to work, but he soaked up every Stewart solo, every Billy Contreras solo, which is brand new language for him. He learned everything, and yeah, he doesn't play their solos; he plays his. But it just, again, it's going to do good things for all those guys. And I'm a little jealous that I can learn all that stuff because I'm the main. I'm the banjo player. I played all that stuff on the record. Yeah.
We may have talked. I'm talking to Bela Fleck. If you just tuned in to Unreal Bluegrass, and the focus is my bluegrass heart. This really phenomenal two CD set. But you mentioned Ciara Hull, and I think maybe off the air we talked about how she filled in so well. Not filled in. That's minimizing her involvement in the live playing of Psalm 136, which was you and Chris on the album. And Ciara, and it's a complicated tune, I think, and the way it starts out and the different shapes it takes. But she did phenomenal on stage. It's like, unless you knew the album, you would think that it was her creation on that part of the mandolin.
Yeah, that's a bit of a shock how well she did on that piece, because we talked about doing it at Rocky Grass, which was our first gig, and we hardly got to rehearse it. I mean, we maybe played it twice before we performed it on stage, and I was like, this girl just played this thing like this very, very intricate, complicated.
It is.
All the way through, every single moment of it, there's some kind of very fine filigree playing that you have to do. And, yeah, Chris and I came up with that in the middle of the night, you know, after these other sessions. We were like, okay, well, there's a bottle of wine at the other end of it. Chris, if you do this tune with me. And he said, let's do it. And we just assembled, you know, we just figured out how it would go and put it down. But we never actually, you know, went out and played it or anything. It was one of those studio things where you just make it happen, you know, and and it was awesome. We had a great time doing it, but you know, but barely got through a pretty incredible.
It's a very complicated duo. It's a very complicated tune.
Yeah, and it ended up great. And then she learned it from there, and now of course she is taking it to her place, which is exactly what you're supposed to do.
Exactly.
But I never would have dreamed it was going to sound as good as it sounded.
Unbelievable.
With her. And she's been a shock overall as she soaks this stuff up and owns it. Everything I thought, I already had very high regard for her, but everything that I thought was, you know, a fraction of what she's actually got. So she's one of those people who could really use a good challenge, because things are really quite easy for her to do. She has like perfect memory, perfect ability to play. So my music presents a challenge that maybe she doesn't get, you know, that often out there.
I think that's
and she seems to be loving it, and she is sure delivering.
She and by the way, last night she was again Mandolin Player of the Year for the International Bluegrass Music Association, and Justin Moses was the Dobro Player of the Year again at IBM.
Right, yeah. And I was struggling with like, what am I going to do? Like, Jerry's not doing this tour, and and if I hired a Dobro player, that really wouldn't solve all the double fiddle stuff.
Nope.
I can't really have another guy, you know. And then it just struck me, Justin could do everything.
Everything.
Yeah, so he, and we don't even get to it all in the show, unfortunately. Some certain things just had to not get played in order to make room for other things. Like, for instance, we really want to do some bluegrass, like so, sing some straight up tunes and like do some, you know, we do Cold on the Shoulder, and we do, you know, a good Tony Rice vocal, and we do a Newgrass Revival. You know, something had to go, so we don't always get to him playing the mandolin as well as he plays it.
Yeah, never showed
but
up.
Everything.
Yeah, and he played a double banjo thing with you, which I thought, you know, I knew he did those things. He'd been on the show when he released his solo album, and I was aware of what he could do. But he did like a double banjo thing with you where I'm thinking, well, unless my ears are deceiving me, he's pretty much note for note where you're going, and very clean and very well done.
Well, he does, you know, he plays the part that Noam and Tony Trischka played on the record perfectly, but then he does his own solo, which is great.
Yeah.
And he plays, you know, astonishingly well, especially if you consider how hard it is to just pick up the banjo and play it cold, which he must do every night on that song. And he nails it. So the secret weapon that comes in and makes the music better, because he's doing all this double fiddle stuff with Michael.
Yeah.
That's just gorgeous, and playing Dobro stuff, and yeah, it's fantastic.
It's a great combination you have on stage now, and I know I'm keeping you
it
longer.
Really is.
Yeah, I know that I'm keeping you, but I want to go back to Strider, because number one, I just happen to like that tune as we sit here now. That'll change within a day as far as my favorite. I won't ever dislike it, but it happens to be my favorite now. And when I saw you in the show, You used a different banjo, and I want to talk a little bit about that banjo if you can, because it's kind of a unique thing. It's not on this album, but I want to talk about the banjo that you made because I think it has a special identification with you.
Sure. It's a banjo that I've been working on with Goldtone to develop, and they've been making things like cello banjos and baritone banjos for me, ukulele banjos, and providing a lot of things that nobody else has really been doing in terms of varieties of banjos that haven't really been around before. And that's been great for me and Abigail, and just to have, you know, an arsenal of different banjos that you can pull out for different things and different registers and stuff like that. But I never thought I was going to ever be interested in like a flathead replica type of thing from then, from those guys. And but my old banjo teacher, Mark Horowitz, who taught me before Tony Trischka, got in touch with me and said, hey, this new thing is really good. You really need to check it out, and you really should do a model with them. And I was like, you can send it to me, but I really just don't believe this is going to happen, because it isn't, you know. And he said, okay, we'll check it out. So I checked it out, and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to play this thing. And then I picked it up a few days later, and I was like, well, that's kind of fun to play, but yeah, I'm not going to play it. And then about a week or two later, I was like, you know, there is something about this thing. And if they, if it could be set up in such a way that it, and they copied my neck perfectly, and we did a bunch of the things that I've come to that make it the Bela setup, you know, which is a different kind of a sound than most banjos have. I was wondering, like, how much of it is the old banjo, my pre-war flathead from 1937, you know, elite banjo, you know, one piece flange, etc.
Yeah.
And how much of it is the setup that I've arrived at over all of these years, just, you know, tweaking until it sounds like what I want it to sound like. And so we just started experimenting with the understanding that I wasn't really going to do this, you know, just to see what we might learn. And gradually I got hooked in, which is how things happen with me. A lot of times I'm like, there's no way I have time to do this. But send it to me, it'll give me a listen, you know. And then if I get hooked, then I find a way. And that's what happened here. I got hooked. They made a beautiful neck that also happens to have a red stone heart in it, which is beautiful, that connects to the album. But the main thing is I wouldn't get behind it if I didn't think it was good. And what I would say about it is it's good. It's not ever going to be a 1930s flathead, but it's you know, it'll get you there till you can get one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really great. Fun to play. Everyone who's played it has gone, wow, I really wasn't expecting to like this. Yeah. Like, I like it. And people are quite knocked out. So, and I'm playing it on stage, and the best test of it is that when I finish playing it and I go back to my old banjo, I don't go, oh, what a relief. I'm just like, oh, yeah, this sounds different than that. And when I pick it up, I don't go, oh, God, I can't play this thing. I go, yeah, I can play this thing. You know, so that's, for me, as the picky snot that I am, that's pretty good.
And Strider has a lot of work with tuners, which you've always done. It's almost totally using the tuners, a little bit of...
It depends on the tuners. I'm taking off on an Earl Scruggs idea that he used on Randy Lynn Rag, where he raises the second string up and drops the third string down. And in his case, he creates a D7th chord that's really rich, and he uses it great on that tune. I changed the tuning, but used the idea of raising the second string up to C and dropping the third string down to G, which makes kind of a suspended seventh-y chord, but still very rootsy. And I think it fits quite well into the bluegrass language. And then I thought, well, I've got these Keith pegs on here. What if I tune up the first string? And then I found I could get a C minor open tuning if I just added that note to it. And it's just taken off from there, but the actual tune is written out of those different keys, and yeah, it uses the tuners to maneuver between different keys and create some nice bendy stuff.
And like I said, it's currently my favorite because I saw it live, but like I said, there's others favorites that have come forward, and that'll move down. But you know, banjo players like the tuners, and for the people listening, let's see if I can explain it this way. It's a device that will allow you to detune your string and lock, and then come back to the same spot if you've set them correctly. So you have that thing, if they think of Flint Hill Special or Earl's Breakdown or Randy Lynn Rag, without regard to the tunings, it's a little device, all kinds of ways to get it done, to change that string tune and come back and not have to think about Earl did it, I think, without him, but I mean, this gets you a nice little thing.
Well, he did it without him till he pulled his hair out, and then he got people to drill holes in his neck and put in these cam tuners, which he could count on showing up back in tune. It's another great Earl Scruggs invention, actually, innovation.
Yeah.
But most people use the more modern Keith tuners, but I discovered the cam tuners are actually more trustable. You just have to be willing to drill your headstock.
That's the thing.
Which I am willing to do on the golds, on the golds.
Gold tone. Yeah, good, good. Yeah. Listen, we've talked about the Strider is one of the tunes. I've asked you to pick out another tune. I want you to lead up to Slippery Eel. Then I want to come back and chat a little bit more. I know you've got a million things going on, but let's do an introduction to Slippery Eel off of this, My Bluegrass Heart. And I'll drop that tune in and then we'll come back and talk just a little bit more.
Great. There was a certain point in the recording where I had already, you know, had two separate bands. And I was embracing the idea that this was not going to be like the same band for the whole record as I've typically done on my bluegrass records. And that's when I thought, well, why don't I have Chris Thiele on this thing? Cause he and I have been playing together since he was, you know, a little dude. And we really have a great time together. We spark, you know, and I was thinking, well, what would make this fun for Chris? He gets to play with everybody. Well, he'd never played with Billy Strings and I was developing a new friendship with Billy. And I thought, well, wouldn't that be good? But if we do that, they need some challenges. This is not, we're not just going to like play an easy bluegrass tune. This has got to be up to their level so that they walk away from it having been, you know, challenged too. And I wanted to see what they would bring. And I thought these should be the crazy tunes. These should be the ones that go off the rails. And cause there is some stuff on this record that really does fit the definition of bluegrass.
You know? Oh, sure.
Quite a lot of it, but mm-hmm. This would be the place to push it if I was going to.
Yeah.
So we did, and so I wrote this tune kind of at the last minute. I had been messing around with one part of it, and I thought, well, if those guys are going to be here, then we're going into 5/4, and we're going to play a really complicated jig in the middle of it, and we're going to snap between them. And so the hard part about Slippery Eel is going from abandon, wild abandon, directly into extreme technical precision. And so when you hear us go into this jig in the middle of this raging 3/4 bluegrass rocking experience, imagine what it takes to switch between those two brain points of view. That's actually the challenge of this tune.
Yes. Great. It's a wonderful tune. Then let me just take that introduction by Bela Fleck to Slippery Eel, which is on the brand new My Bluegrass Heart. We'll play that tune, and I'm going to come back and talk to Bela a little bit more. I don't mean to eat up your entire day, but let's play Slippery Eel, and I'll be right back. There it was. That was Slippery Eel, as described so well by Bela, as he should be able to. The entire album, you know, I know that you do nothing by accident, Bela. So when I look at the lineup, you have Boulder Dash, which is certainly easily recognizable in a bluegrass vein, and you follow it by Our Little Secret, which is a different feel completely. And then if I flip over to the second CD, you have Wheels Up, again pretty straightforward, and then you follow that with that Psalm 136 that we discussed with Chris and then later with Sierra Hall. I know you line those things up on purpose like that, and there's other points like that, but you had an intent as to how you line these tunes up clearly.
Well, it's just about variety, not becoming monotonous. Anything becomes monotonous if you just do the same thing for the whole record, which doesn't mean you shouldn't. I mean, there are times when you put on a record and you want it to have that same energy all the way through because it puts you in a mood, and that's why you want that record. That's why something like Kind of Blue has become the standard that it is, because all of those songs have a certain mood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think Drive is more like that. This album... I wanted the variety so that, you know, if you had something very traditional sounding with the double fiddles, maybe it would be followed by something, you know, kind of unusual.
Yeah,
And then you could go back and forth and you would never become tired of any of it, because something new was going to come and change the perspective. And also this idea that bluegrass is a lot of things these days, and what used to be progressive now isn't that progressive, and you know, what will be progressive in the future will be quite different from what we all think is now.
Yeah.
So, you know, things that I've done that used to feel so out there, don't feel out there at all with the current climate of players and the music people are making.
They, you know, Bela, they grew up on your music and music you were involved in. And so while that stuff was brand new back in those days, it's now becoming something that people are used to hearing. And so it enters their brain and then they interpret it differently. But yeah.
Right. As I grew up on, you know, Dice and Tony Trischka and Bill Keith, and that was my starting point. So that's makes all the sense in the world.
That's the way it's supposed
it's
to
fun.
Work. That's the way it's supposed to work. The, yeah, there you go. See, I think that's the great catch from that, from your thing is the continuum of bluegrass. The Old North Woods is a starts off with kind of a it's almost a, it's a, there's a couple different notes to Heavy Traffic Ahead, but then the tune changes completely. But that's like, oh, listen to this. This is bluegrass, and you know it right away. And then the tune turns into what you've written. But when you listen to that, you think, oh, I remember this very well. Same thing with
it's very much of a Bill Monroe lift.
I mean,
trying to write a tune in the style of Bill Monroe.
Yeah, exactly. Us Chickens is a really fun tune, and there's quotes in there from. Well, the only one that I recognize instantly as we're speaking is Foggy Mountain Rock. There's a little bit of a throw in from there on banjo as you're playing that tune. So you've written tunes in the style of, but in the style of Bela Fleck as you look at these players that inspired you and that you still love to play, and all these things come out uniquely you and uniquely part of this My Bluegrass Heart as I think it is. I love your cello banjo playing. You mentioned Gold Tone. You played one of my favorite tunes the other night with the cello banjo. I just think it's a remarkable instrument. Your playing, by the way, on that is different than anybody else's. There are people who have cello banjos, and more often than not, they're not using three fingers the way you use. They're not using that same approach to playing it. It's more of a when I hear it more often, it's a kind of a frailing sound. But you stick to the three finger playing from what I saw and what I hear. And that tune is just so unique.
That tune is more thank you, of course. I really appreciate it. That tune is more playing, you know, fiddle tune style. So in a lot of cases, I'm playing what we call single string, which I guess you would attribute to someone like Don Reno or Eddie Adcock as the originators of that style. And I'm using it to you know, just to play fiddle tunes, every note of the fiddle tune. And then there's some Bill Keith, Bobby Thompson, you know, melodic style playing. But it all sounds different on an instrument that's an octave below a normal banjo.
It's tune we're talking about is Hunky Dory, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's and it also reminds me so much of John Hartford.
Exactly.
The basic tune there just sounds like something he might have written. And, you know, he just loved fiddle tunes, loved to play the fiddle as much as the banjo or more. And it just sounds like, it just reminds me of him quite a lot.
It does. And there are lines in there that you can almost hear what he would do vocally. If there were lyrics to it, you could hear him singing. And he always had that tuned down banjo, which when I was younger, I couldn't figure out what was going on. I didn't know you could retune the fourth string to get there. I kept thinking, where's that note? It's not on my fretboard anywhere when he would play this.
Right. Well, there's the whole banjo. Like he brought the whole banjo down.
Good point.
Down to E, down to D, even down to C on Morning Bugle. It went so low. And this is even lower. This is another fourth lower than that, and it really gets into the floppy, you know, booga 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 kind of sound. But it's really fun, you know.
It's a cool tune, and I love the sound of that cello banjo with that group that you had. You look like you're having a blast. I know you're really busy, and I know there's a lot of stuff going on with appearances and getting behind this effort. But I just tell you, from watching the other night, you just seem to be having on stage an absolute blast reproducing this music or the intent with the band that you're traveling with. And I say congratulations on having written these tunes and gotten this group together, not only on the record, but to be able to pare it down to five or six that you can then travel with and appear is going to change and then get the feeling and the tones and the tunes off of this album. It just was a great, great. And I've seen you so many times, Bela. I've seen you with Edgar Meyer. I've seen you with everything. And I just enjoyed this about as much as anything I've seen.
Hey, thanks, Steve. You know, it is a feeling of coming home. And even with people I don't know as well, you know, as my old pals, there's this feeling that we're all kindred. And we're getting to know each other, and it's new, and they're inspiring. And, you know, playing bluegrass when it feels right, it's kind of like you're flying. You get kind of giddy. You know, and we come off the stage and nobody's like bummed out. Everyone's like flying.
I like
and happy. And, you know, it's just, Sierra is a spark plug and, Michael is a spark plug. And Brian is like a sage, you know, who's just pulling incredible stuff out of the air constantly. Mark Schatz is holding it down. It's an incredible joy, and I'll miss this this iteration when we go to the next one. I know I'm going to love playing with Sam and Jerry. I always do. It's sure. That's my home. You know, that's a different. That's like old marriage, yeah. where you know what to do without even talking about it.
Yeah.
But they're going to attack this music in a different way.
Yes, that's right.
And it's going to be really cool to hear it that way for me. You know, I'll be the same guy that played it with these guys. But I'm looking forward to getting back with this group again when we get to do it again, this first lineup, because it couldn't have gone better, I got to say. And I am happy. I find myself happy in a way I haven't been in a while. And bluegrass sort of completes me. And I sometimes forget that as the years go by and I'm trying to do all these other things. And it's just so good to touch base with this music again.
It's a wonderful, you know, listen, I'm so glad I got this. You came close enough across the river from me where I could run over and catch it. And I'm so glad that I did it. Because like I said, I've seen you and you name it. I've seen combinations with you and Tony and you and Edgar and you and your bands and you with whatever. I've seen them all. So I just was so pleased that I got to get in there. So you're going to be done with this particular tour before this show airs. You'll have a couple more shows and then you'll be done, and then you'll just kind of be, I guess, regrouping doing
yeah,
whatever
in December,
you're doing.
Okay. I guess late November, the Sam Bush, Jerry Douglas, Stewart,
okay.
and Edgar Meyer's doing it with us too.
Yeah.
That iteration will go out for about a month, and then we have a couple of very special concerts. The one which has been announced with a bigger cast, including Thiele and Billy Strings and both of these groups. And we're going to play at the Ryman, which sold out in about a minute.
Yeah, really?
And another major American theater, which we haven't been able to announce yet.
Okay.
We're going to be announcing another show with that expanded lineup. And those will be kind of like the crown jewels of this tour, because I just don't think we're going to be able to get everyone together like that very often, if ever again.
No, not very often.
Try to film them. And then in the summer, you know, I hope to go back out with, you know, whoever wants to, if people still want to. But I still have to fit it in, you know, with what Abigail and I do and the other things that I love to do. But this is the focus for this next couple of years as far as, you know, my big push to do something of my own.
All to our benefit, I'm talking to Bela Fleck, if you just tuned in. And the center of the discussion is My Bluegrass Heart. Great new album. I want to let people know where they can find it.
Well, everywhere you can find
everywhere
CDs,
you look.
I guess.
And, yeah.
There is a beautiful vinyl package. We didn't expect it to come out by the tour. It kind of blew me away how beautiful it is. It's this beautiful artwork by Willie Matthews, who has done the Telluride posters for you know, many, 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 many years. And he did this stunning watercolor banjo and all the instruments, too. And the big package is like the old days where you get to have a big, you know, album, and you open it up and there's all this artwork and all
yeah.
this text, and you can see it with your eyes, with your old eyes.
I would love
so
to see that.
So that's nice.
That. Yeah.
But otherwise, I'm sure it's on all the streaming services
yeah, okay.
and Apple Music, and you can find it. It should be very easy to find. It's on a major label.
I'd just like to give the artist the opportunity to tell people where to find it. You're everywhere. The album's doing very, very well. Before I leave you, I want you to do an introduction into Hunter's Moon. Then as we get to
sure.
that, then I will say goodbye to you. I won't come back to you again. We'll play Hunter's Moon from My Bluegrass Heart, and then I'll let you on your way.
Sure. So in the studio, I was excited about having Stuart and Michael Cleveland together, Stuart Duncan and Michael Cleveland, two of our best fiddlers in the bluegrass world. And I had this idea of them starting it with like a round, a little phrase that just repeated, and Stewart kept saying, "Oh, Bela, isn't this just going to be monotonous and drive everybody crazy?" And I said, "Well, they're going to only hear it once. You have to play it like 10 times while we do all these takes, but the listeners will only hear it once." And the truth was it created a great sort of different start to the song. And I would say this tune has a lot of Tony Rice influence, in that if you think about like the way things felt on like Manzanita or Cold on the Shoulder, this sort of beat that he had, but applied to a little bit more of an adventurous, you know, rhythmic structure, which he also loved to do. If you think about his Tony Rice Unit records, he would do things that switched from 3-4 to 4-4 all the time. This is a little further of a stretch, going into a lot of, you know, there's a lot of 5-4 and odd bars and stuff, but, you know, but nothing that he wouldn't have done. So I feel like it's really an homage to him and an expansion of some of the things that he liked to do, you know, us trying to figure out what can we do with this idea. And it's a very old tune that's been sitting in my chest of tunes for, you know, decades.
Decades.
And
wow.
I'm glad it finally got life, you know.
Not only does he play them and orchestrate them and arrange them and bring them to life, he's written these tunes. And Bela, that, I appreciate your time so much. I'm going to let you go now and, we'll play for the audience of Unreal Bluegrass Hunter's Moon one more cut that you've selected for today from My Bluegrass Heart. Wonderful show. Wonderful album. I can't say enough about it. Thank you so much for your time and all the effort that you put into the music and delivering it to us out here.
Well, thank you. And I really appreciate you spreading the word about the music and that you like it so much. It means a lot to me.
It's obviously
a labor of love for me. So now, it's a little bit of a fragile moment when you put it out in the world and find out what people think about what you've been, you know, hoarding and loving in private. But, see, people are loving it, and it's making me very happy.
I think you got nothing to worry about there. All right, Bela, listen, I know you're heading out somewhere else, so thank you so much for your time,
Steve,
and everything.
Take it easy.
All right, I'll see you, bud.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, bye.